Comforting the afflicted, afflicting the comfortable, bringing faith to the doubtful, doubt to the faithful, friend to the friendless, odor to the odorless, calling lame radio to rise and talk. This is Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. Hello to Mr. and Mrs. Middle American and all of those tasty Canadians. We'll do open lines coming up later on this hour. And we're about an hour away from a conversation that many people have been encouraging me to have for months. I don't know what it is about Riley Martin that has led so many of you to email and suggest that he would be a great conversation partner on Coast to Coast. And he said, you got to talk to this guy. Have you heard him before? Well, I'd heard of him before, but I never had actually heard him on Coast to Coast. He's been a guest many times, and several of you have emailed and said, you just don't get enough of this guy. So about an hour from now, Riley Martin, and what it is that he has learned from the Beavians that we might be able to use today. His whole story. Why him? Of all people, why him? And most importantly, what did they download to him that we can all benefit from? We'll explore that more, plus some interesting updates on some previous guests and stories. It seems like in the last two or three weeks, we've gotten a ton of them. Lots of interesting stories, many conversations about books with authors and scientists, and almost everybody's represented in crypto news, and especially an important update about that whole Vioxx story from a couple of months ago. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Well, so many of you emailed last week. In fact, I think, and I don't keep hard numbers on this, but I'm pretty sure that last week's show with Dr. T. Colin Campbell and the China Study was the show that generated the most email I've ever received on any show ever on Coast to Coast. Not all of it, of course, is relevant enough to share. So email will actually be kind of shorter because it seemed like it was either the guy's brilliant and it was the smartest thing I've ever heard, or email from raw milk people saying you got to go the raw milk way. That was it. It was almost like, right, but like 100 in one camp and 100 in the other. I'll share some of those with a couple other observations this week, including an interesting update on a previous first hour guest on Coast to Coast when we do email later on, and we'll open up the phones for some open lines. But we have some news to report that won't surprise anybody who is listening to that show. This one comes out of NBC4, and it's within the last day or so. Milk does a body good, but it may not be so great for a teenager's complexion. New research on teenage acne and milk. Dermatologists seem to agree that something in milk and dairy products may be linked to adolescent acne, but they haven't been able to pin down the reason why. In a new study published in the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology in February, researchers pointed out hormones and bioactive molecules in milk may be the culprit. But Dr. Harvey Arbison, a dermatologist at the University of Buffalo, suspects that iodine in milk is actually at work. He said farmers give their cows iodine-fortified feed to prevent infection, and they use sanitizing iodine solutions on their cows' udders and milking equipment. He said, I've advised my acne patients for years to decrease their dairy intake. That story just popped up since last week. Earth's magnetic north may not be popping up in the same place, however. It's drifting away from the North Pole towards Siberia, away from North America toward Siberia at such a clip that Canada might lose its spectacular northern lights. That, according to scientists on Thursday, this accelerated movement over the past century, it doesn't mean that Earth's magnetic field will collapse, but it might. And it also, it could imply that there's going to be a magnetic pole shift coming up scientists have long known that magnetic poles migrate and in some rare cases swap, but they say this may be part of a normal oscillation and it might eventually migrate back toward Canada. Lots of snow on the East Coast. A lot of people still digging out from 7 inches of snow as it moved eastward from the Great Lakes this week. They might be interested in knowing that two of Greenland's largest glaciers are retreating at an alarming pace. They're not getting enough snow, most likely because of climate warming, some scientists say. One of the glaciers is currently moving about 9 miles a year compared to 3 miles a year in 2001. The other glacier is retreating at about 7 miles a year, up 4 miles a year from that same period. It's quite a staggering rate of increase, said a scientist at the American Geophysical Union annual meeting. Meanwhile, one of the fastest melting glaciers in North America has reached the halfway point of disintegration and will continue to retreat for another 2 decades. Alaska's Columbia Glacier, about the size of L.A., has shrunk 9 miles since the 1980s. It is expected to lose an additional 9 miles in the next 15 to 20 years before the bed of the glacier rises above sea level. And it's not the only thing that's going on this week. American and European researchers have observed a fissure in the desert in the remote northeast that could be the birth of a new ocean basin. This story you can find out more on at coasttocoastam.com. Researchers from Britain, France, Italy, and the U.S. have been observing this 37-mile-long fissure since it split open in September in the Afar Desert, which is Afar from here, I think. And they're not, you know, before you start investing in oceanfront property, they say it could take 1 million years to fully form into an ocean, unless they put a casino there, and they'll probably rush that along. It has become sort of a tradition, apparently, to make sensational discoveries about Noah's Ark in October. That, according to a story you can link up to at coasttocoastam.com. But now, legendary mountain climber and president of the Russia's Union of Mountain Climbers, Vladimir Shatayev, has gone for his 7th tour of Mount Ararat in search of Noah's Ark. And together with his companion, he managed to investigate the eastern slope of Mount Ararat, and they are set to announce a research discovery that they say will unravel the mystery of Noah's Ark. We'll have to wait for more details on this. You can find out more at the website. But isn't this like the 8th Ark that they supposedly found now? I mean, Noah would have had to have had an armada of arcs, I think, at this point to account for all of them. But it's happened before where there's just been a rash of these discoveries. I don't know if you've ever tracked that, but in the Middle Ages, for a while there, the big rage for relics was Jesus's foreskin from his circumcision, as though A, it had been saved, and B, like it was floating around. But there's a bunch, and there's still churches in Europe to this day that maintain that they have the holy foreskin. Obviously, the number of churches that claim to have had it can't all have had it, or the poor boy would have been some sort of snuffle up, I guess. But the Israeli company that recently tested one of the most shock-resistant materials known to man, 5 times stronger than steel, at least twice as strong as any impact-resistant material currently in use as protective gear. This new nano-based material is on its way to becoming the armor of the future. It's a fascinating story. You can find out more at physorg.com, P-H-Y-S-O-R-G, physorg.com. A year ago, this company reported the development of the first commercial nano-based lubricant. But now that new research shows that the same type of product can be used to create an armor that can stop a steel projectile traveling at velocities of up to 1.5 kilometers a second. That means that shock pressures generated equivalent to the dropping of 4 diesel locomotives on an area the size of one's fingernail. So just think that you could drop, you could have this on and theoretically protect yourself from 4 diesel engines falling on your fingernail, or at least that's the equivalent of that. which is good news for those of us who have a tendency to stub their toes on ironing boards. More on this next week with George Noory. He's got a show coming up on nanotechnology you don't want to miss. We've talked a lot about spy chips, about the RFID tags that are in so many clothes. And one of those things that came up during that conversation with the authors about spy chips was that they were working on batteries that would power these spy chips all the time. That right now that they're passively read, that you have to have an outside power source, say, like something at the door of a store, and it would read your spy chip as you walked into the store. Well, now they are, and this week, Japanese NEC has developed a thin foldable battery that can be easily woven into clothes. The battery will be used extensively in the future to power all kinds of gadgets, they say, from electronic paper, which is interesting, to tags that trace retail goods in real time, which is just what many of us are fearing, that wherever you go, you can be read with this system. The NEC, I love this, the spokesperson for the Japanese company NEC said, quote, "It's bringing us closer to a ubiquitous networked society by allowing access to the network anytime, anywhere," which they say like it's a good thing. Good for them. You know, we're going to be read anywhere we go. And they're saying it with a smile. Well, most Americans carry cell phones. At least the government for now is stopping just about anybody from tracking their movements from those handsets. In recent years, law enforcement officials have turned to cellular technology as a tool for easily and secretly monitoring the movements of suspects as they occur. In the last 4 months, three federal judges have denied prosecutors, though, the right to get cell phone tracking information from wireless companies without first, quote, showing probable cause to believe that a crime is or has been committed. That is the same standard applied to requests for search warrants. With these mobile cellular phones, and many people don't know this, I mean, there's 195 million of them in this country alone, and with the technology that exists right now, companies are able to know where you are within about 300 yards of where you're standing at any given moment. And then this story, I guess, is sort of a companion piece for this from New Zealand. A man who robbed a New Zealand bank was so disappointed with the haul that he got that he tried again, this time by phone. He called the bank back and said, "I'm the guy who robbed you the other day, and I want the manager to put some more money in a bag and go stand in the street. I'll drive by slowly and take the bag from you and drive off." Police were able to trace the calls and arrested the man on Saturday, charging him with aggravated robbery and demanding money with menaces. But it just goes to show you when it comes to this type of tracking technology that, you know, some criminals make it easier than others. John Abramson has been on with us before. Dr. John Abramson has worked as a family doctor in Appalachia and also in Hamilton, Massachusetts. He served as a chairman of the Department of Family Practice, as well as being an author. The book is Overdosed America, The Broken Promises of American Medicine. He was on with George back in August, and we've talked to him before about the book Overdosed America. Dr. John Abramson, good morning, and thanks for giving us some time.
Good morning, Ian. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
You know, the question of Vioxx came up again this week, and I'm not sure I totally understand the significance of the story, but this time it isn't focused so much on the drug companies that was responsible for it, or Merck specifically, but also somehow also the sort of the medical industry that normally we kind of rely on, medical journalism, isn't it?
Ian, that's exactly right. This is such an important story because we've got a real crisis going on in American medicine. People trust that their doctors are getting the right information from the medical journals about how best to treat them. And what we've got in Vioxx is a situation that lets us see how this system has broken down. Merck did a big study of Vioxx, and the results were published in the New England Journal of Medicine, our most trusted medical journal. The doctors who read that, and we can't ask our doctors to be any more scholarly than read the best journals, the doctors who read that were left with the impression that Vioxx was a safer drug. But Merck and the FDA knew not only was Vioxx not a safer drug, it's significantly more dangerous than naproxen or Aleve, which is sold over the counter. Provides no better arthritis relief, costs 10 to 20 times more, and is significantly more dangerous than Aleve. So the question is, why did American doctors prescribe $7 billion worth of Vioxx that caused about 100,000 heart attacks and deaths after Merck and the FDA understood that it was more dangerous? The answer is that the article in the New England Journal of Medicine misrepresented the results of that study.
Now, let me jump in here and ask. I think I understand, although I don't endorse nor would I encourage, but I understand why a company would want to juice their results for the best possible PR and marketing spin. But what I don't understand is what's in it for the New England Journal of Medicine to overlook the negative data when I think most Americans would think of them as being more of a watchdog group or a kind of a critical peer review group than, you know, the PR arm of a pharmaceutical company.
Ian, that's why I, after 20 years of practicing family medicine, that's why I left to write Overdosed America, because that's not true. The doctors don't understand it, and the public doesn't understand it. The journals have become dependent on drug company money. Obviously, through advertising, much of the journal revenues come through advertising of drugs in their pages. But now we've got a new issue. The editor of The Lancet, which is the most prestigious British medical journal, testified in front of the House of Commons just about a year ago, and he said that the drug companies spend up to £1 million, that's $1,750,000, to buy reprints of commercially advantageous articles. And God knows that this article about Vioxx was one of the most commercially advantageous in history. So if the New England Journal of Medicine or any other journal publishes an article that's advantageous to a drug company, the drug company buys reprints, and they give those reprints to their drug reps who take it around to the doctors with lunch and with supper offers and girls and so forth.
Right.
So that there's a tremendous incentive for the journals now to publish the articles that are advantageous to the drug companies.
Now, how much are they making? I mean, and do we have access to that kind of data? I mean, I would have thought that the New England Journal of Medicine, and this is just an outsider looking in, would have been like a break-even proposition, or maybe, you know, minorly profitable, but that it would be run as a kind of not-for-profit organization that was just about serving medicine and not about, say, being People Magazine or Time Magazine, whereas obviously there's a big profit motive.
Right. The problem, Ian, is that all the nonprofit organizations start to act like for-profit corporations, so that the the New England Journal of Medicine is owned by the Massachusetts Medical Society. You better believe they got very nice headquarters at the Massachusetts Medical Society. So it's like, it's just like the drug companies, even though they're nonprofit. When is enough money enough? And the problem is that it isn't enough. The organizations keep going after money. Now, three-quarters of the articles that are published in our best journals are funded by the drug companies and medical device companies. And the problem is that those, we know those studies are much more likely to support their products than non-commercially sponsored studies. So what we've got is a situation where doctors are trained to trust these journals, but the journals are publishing articles that tend to be infomercials and tend to tell them to use the sponsor's drugs. There's a real breakdown in American medicine here, Ian.
All right. Now, what has been their reaction since this story came? Well, who broke the story that the New England Journal of Medicine overlooked Merck's unflattering Vioxx data? Where did that story appear?
I think it came out, one of the major sources is my book, Overdosed America, where I tell the story about Vioxx. It was published a week before Vioxx was withdrawn last year, and the whole history is laid out. There was also an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association that showed that cardiovascular data was omitted. But
so have they responded to that yet? I mean, has the New England Journal of Medicine gone back and said, oh, our bad, or we knew that, but, I mean, have they explained where they were with it?
Yeah, Ian, well, now we've got a very interesting situation because the Vioxx litigation is flushing out the truth gradually. And the reason why this is now in the news again is because one of the editors of the New England Journal of Medicine got deposed in the Vioxx litigation. And he was confronted with a memo from Merck that showed about July to November. The article was published in November, a July memo that showed that Merck knew that it didn't include all the data in the New England Journal article. So the New England Journal published what's called an expression of concern a couple of days ago, saying, hey, we were wronged. We're the violated party.
All right, well, let's leave the story there for now, except to say you can always find out more at overdosedamerica.com. Thank you, Dr. John Abramson. Look forward to more on that story when more people are deposed, I guess. We'll start getting...
Pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right, and coming up, we'll do email and open line. Stand by for the numbers on Coast to Coast AM. Well, lots of email from last week's show before we go to the phones for this evening. And let me just say, I'm a couple hundred messages behind still. I'm trying to get caught up, but so much email from last week's show. And I'm just trying to respond to everybody as we go along, even though most of the email kind of fell into one or two categories. It was kind of all about Dr. T. Colin Campbell, although we still get email about a previous show that I need to pass along to you about. Some of you keep emailing about the two guests we had on talking about the environmentally friendly housing, how to create it, how to make these perfectly 100% self-sustaining homes. And a lot of people heard it on the replay in November. The original air date for that show was November 19th. So if you're looking for links on that, you have to go back to November 19th. Bernard writes that Saturday program about vegans was very good. My grandparents were dairy farmers in New Jersey. I have heard it said that the reason why it was mandated that milk be pasteurized was to have the farmers take their milk to a certified creamery so that the volume of milk could then be taxed. How about that? It was not a problem to drink raw milk until the tax agent found pasteurization. Don't know if that's true, but we get a lot of emails about raw milk and how that's the solution. Adrian wrote, said, I loved your show last week about the China study. For my 40th birthday, I went to the McDougal program, and I went vegan. The second day I was there, I was able to cut my diabetes medicine in half. By the third day, I was totally off and have never been back on since, 6 months now. That's her story. As far as not liking soy milk, I don't either. I prefer rice milk. There are also different milks around, hazelnut and whole grain. You just have to find the one you like, but you do have choices. Brian said the same thing. I can't stand soy milk. He said, I've been using rice milk, and that tastes pretty good. I've also tried some of the other grain-based milks, and all of them are better than soy. I got email from people that make these different products, these alternative milk products, and I'll test some of those out this week and get back to you on that. But some of the soy milk, some of the other milks, You know what it looks like to me when you put it in a glass? It looks like the stuff that comes out of the alien in Aliens when you stab it. And that's all I'm saying. It looks like stuff that drips off of the beast that's coming after Sigourney Weaver. Excellent interview with Dr. Campbell, said Bill. He said, I'm a poster child, 65 years old, for Dr. Campbell's theories on animal proteins' impact on cancer. I've had a remission now with four serious cancers. I've been through expensive standard AMA-approved cancer treatment, but I'm finally remaining in remission with all of my cancers by elimination of all animal protein, except a small amount of fish, he said, from my diet. My oncologist had written a letter in 2002 that I had a 1 in 20 chance of survival. That was 2002. He said, I remain in good health now. I intend to write a book on my incredible containment of cancer by eliminating most animal protein if he stays in good health for another year. Bill, that should be an interesting book. I look forward to it, and I hope you make it. Richard wrote, Dr. Campbell's findings are a good start. Now look deeper. Look at what is being fed to the livestock. Look at the fertilizer that is being used on the plants. Look at the effects of synthetic nitrogen versus natural nitrogen. Look at the difference in proteins. Look at the pathogen resistance in plants. That's a whole nother show. It's like the last thing I need right now is to start looking suspiciously at my salad, too, on top of that. That's all I got left. I'm going to end up being what is it they described on The Simpsons? A level 5 vegan. I never eat anything that ever cast a shadow. I don't know if I'm ready for that. Ian heard your interview with Captain Sweeney a few weeks ago. Remember him? He was the captain that was on. We were talking about piracy, and he'd written this book, and he talked a little bit about his experience with pirates that are still on the open seas, plus a couple of conversations about ghost ships and stuff. Well, he says, thanks for keeping him over to finish his story. My dad is in his 80s and was an avid sailor. I thought the captain's book would be a great Christmas present. I sent Captain Sweeney and emailed to see if I could get a signed copy for my dad. Lo and behold, I got an email back on how to do this. Today I received a copy of his signed book from Captain Sweeney. What a man of his word. Thanks again for great guests on your program. Merry Christmas to you and your family and the whole Coast to Coast staff. Thank you so much. Captain Sweeney was a great guest, and we look forward to having him back on again. Dr. Judith Orloff just wrote this week, too. She said she had such a great time on Coast to Coast. She's received so much positive feedback from the listeners about her show on energy vampires. She said happy holidays to everybody, so I'm passing that along. And Paul writes to say, I'm a StreamLink member. Listen to the show at my work on my iPod. My fellow workers already questioned my sanity by coming to work talking of conspiracies, aliens, and other things I've learned on Coast to Coast, similar to our conversation we're going to have coming up with Riley Martin, I think. Listening to your last couple of shows with my headphones on, I've sniggered and burst out laughing. You're doing a great job and keep me smiling at work. My fellow employees think I'm nutty as ever, however. So, Paul, if you're listening to that with your headphones on, try not to laugh out loud when I read this email that came in from Scott in regard to several shows we've had about the government and about big business. It's a great quote from a guy named Orson Card, and it says this: if pigs could vote, he said, remember, if pigs could vote, the man with the slop bucket would be elected swineherd every time, no matter how much slaughtering he did on the side. Great. Thank you for always sending in your observations and your questions. We're happy to try to help as much as we can. Leave us some time for open lines next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, where are you going to take us in the time that we have here for open lines before we get to Riley Martin? Long-awaited conversation we're going to have with Riley Martin coming up about the coming of Tan and the insights that this credible guy will pass along to us from his incredible story. Let's go first to east of the Rockies, where Rick is hanging on Coast to Coast AM. Rick?
Yeah, good morning, Ian, and happy holidays.
Thank you, you too.
I have a question and a comment for you.
Sure.
The question first. You know, I listen to Coast to Coast, and people are always calling in and talking about these things called chemtrails.
Right.
What exactly are chemtrails?
Well, I mean, chemtrails are the streaks that you see across the sky that some people would say are just contrails. I have many friends who are pilots, and they say,
they're not talking about vapor trails, are they?
Yep, vapor trails is another way to call them. And the belief is that, and some people have done some interesting work in this, that these are chemical trails being spread out over a wide geographical area to pass along various types of, you know, airborne products to the population.
I don't think the government's above doing stuff like that, but if they were going to do it, don't you think they'd do it at midnight or use some sort of invisible gas rather than something that somebody could see?
Well, I actually think that there's some real problems with the chemtrail argument, although some people give some strong anecdotal evidence of it. I have too many friends who are pilots. I keep asking them about those.
Uh-huh.
And my friends who are pilots say, this is not happening. It's not my experience, so I can't speak about it.
Yeah, my understanding was that if a plane flew fast enough or high enough, it would just naturally leave a vapor trail. It was no big deal to it, you know?
Well, but then the other question is, even if you did put chemicals that high up in the atmosphere, how much would they dissipate? If you were going to put it over an area where you could see the chemtrail, by the time it came down into an air, and where would the wind take it? Where you saw it isn't where it would end up. If it were drifting downward, it would get caught up in the winds, and it would end up, you know, 10 communities over. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but
no, I would think if they're talking about things going at treetop level, and you see then it is exactly what they're talking about. But the only things I've seen like that coming off planes have been like extremely high altitude.
Well, that and the I'd be more worried at this point about those big chunks of blue ice that are coming from the latrines up there in the sky. that's what I'd be more worried about anyway. But thanks, Rick. Let's
go. And the quick comment I had, Ian, I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoy your opening news coverage, or when you go into the crypto news,
sure,
and stuff like that, because as opposed, without mentioning names to the other people, I get enough of that stuff on the 6 o'clock news. I don't need to hear it on Coast to Coast.
And, well, everybody's got their different styles, yeah. So I'm glad you like what you're hearing. That's
negative, garbage in, garbage out. You can't, there's so much negativity. And I'm just one little request. I heard this woman, I think her name was Linda Moltenhau. She's
sure.
An investigative reporter.
Yeah. Right.
And this was when they were doing the reporting about that fellow in Canada, Paul, the defense minister, who
right.
went public with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
She had a taped interview. She would make a fabulous guest.
Oh, I've spoken with the Linda Moltenhau before, and I have not since this story came out. Of course, it's been a while, but I would love to throw her name out there, and let's get her back on coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. She had a taped interview with him and also with some retired general from the Air Force, and the stuff they were saying was off the charts.
The last time I spoke with her was about cattle mutilation, so it's been a while since I've updated myself with her. So thank you, and I'll take a look at that. Let's go west of the Rockies where Larry is waiting on Coast to Coast AM. Larry, where are you going to take us?
How you doing today, Ian?
Couldn't be better. Better than I deserve. How about you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Hey, I wanted to tell everybody that last December I called in for Art on his prediction program in December.
And you got another one coming up here in just a couple of weeks.
And I'll be calling in again.
Good.
I was number 61, and my prediction was that there was going to be a tsunami that was going to take out the Space Needle in downtown Seattle.
Yeah.
I, unfortunately, a lot of times I shouldn't have pigeonholed myself time-wise. And I said from August to October, I missed that. But just a couple of weeks ago, Art was talking to Major Ed Daines, and he was telling Art that sometime coming up in the very near future, early 2006, that he remote viewed that Seattle was going to get hit and that the Space Needle was going to turn into the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Hmm.
And I just thought that was really interesting that I saw it before he did.
Well, that is interesting. Maybe that's where he got it from. Do you ever think about that? But I'll give you a suggestion. I don't think it would ever. I mean, that thing is so top heavy that you go 5 or 6 degrees to the left or to the right, that thing's coming down. I don't think it's going to stay leaning for long anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, although there was this really interesting story this week. I don't know if you heard it from Taipei, that they have a building, the world's tallest building, and it is thought to have triggered two recent earthquakes because of the stress that building that tall exerts on the ground beneath it. And I thought that was really interesting.
That's fascinating. I hadn't heard that one.
It's pulling on the ground or pushing on the ground to a point where it's exacerbating the faults that are underneath it.
Interesting.
So we'll keep an eye. So your prediction show is coming up. Actually, I get a night off for that. And Art will be in on a Saturday night, and he'll do the prediction show coming up just before January 1st, where he always does it.
And it's not going to be coming from Japan like I had originally predicted. It's coming from the Pacific Plate, right off the coast of Oregon, Washington.
Okay, so that's you're standing by your prediction, just not the time element that
you're supposed to. Yeah, I missed the time frame, but it's going to be sometime 2006, definitely.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Keep me up to date, and I look forward to you being wrong, of course.
Well,
you know I'll be rooting for that to not happen because of the loss of life that would incur. But
absolutely. Art said the same thing. He's got family and friends in downtown Seattle. Pike's Place is going to be gone, and it's going to be a real major devastation. But I hope I'm wrong, but at the same time,
we'll be watching.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Larry. Let's go to the wild card line where Jack is on Coast to Coast AM. Jack, where are you going to take us? Jack, did we miss him? Did not get to him fast enough? Okay, Sylvia, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM. Sylvia?
Yes. How are you?
I couldn't be better. Where are you going to take us?
I was listening to your comment on, is it Overdose America?
Right. The book and the author, the website and the book by Dr. John Abramson.
Yeah, that's one of my areas of study and expertise. I've been researching epidemic diseases in the United States, and I come from a genetic disposition to have immune-related diseases because I'm part Native American.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in the medical industry and been around the medical industry for the last 20 years. I was married to a pathologist. And I wrote a book called Understanding Our Epidemic. It's available on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. And essentially, I give an overview of my theory of what the cause of epidemic diseases.
Well, what is your theory then? Just to, not that I won't go to Amazon and buy it, but what's your theory?
If you look at the statistics and the rise of epidemic diseases, they correspond with the introduction and the increased use of high fructose corn syrup in the food industry.
Of high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, it's replaced sugar.
Right.
And if you look at the ethnic groups that have the highest incidence of these immune-related diseases, they're ethnic groups like the Asian, Native American, people who have a tendency to have lactose intolerance. And if you look at the similarities between lactose and high fructose corn syrup, they're both sugars that are not readily absorbed in the upper GI tract and utilized in the body for energy.
Okay.
They go into your lower intestines, and they upset the ecology of your intestinal flora, essentially causing an intestinal bacterial infection.
I hadn't thought I had flora in my GI tract. I knew I had fauna, but I didn't know I had flora down there.
Yeah. Well. Okay.
Flora and fauna.
The intestinal flora. If you have an intestinal infection, you're going to have an immune response, a constant immune response.
All right. Good. Let's just say. I mean, I appreciate that, but I'm going to try and get in one other caller here, so you can find out more in your book, and you can buy that online. And thank you, Sylvia, for that. And Jack, you get the last thought on this here as we're heading into the top of the hour. And Riley Martin, and thanks for hanging on. Sorry, I missed you a second ago. Jack?
Yeah, you're a marvelous compliment to George Norrie. Absolutely marvelous.
I love being part of the team.
I really look forward to the Saturday night because of your program. And I mean that sincerely.
Thank you.
Got some great suggestions regarding last week's program. I have been ordering organic bison from a lady in Rice Lake, Wisconsin. Ian, I used to be a macrobiotic fellow because of all the health problems I had.
Right.
And then when I discovered this lady's bison, it's unlike anything I've ever had before in terms of meat. It's organically raised. In bison, the flavor is in the meat, not in the fat, so it's naturally lean. The flavor is marvelous.
Well, we get a lot of...
a website, if I can give it out to you.
Go ahead.
North Star Bison, northstarbison.com. And regarding raw milk, she has a close friend also of Wisconsin who has a food club. She's an organic dairy farmer. She provides all sorts of raw milk products. I got some of her raw milk.
Like raw bison milk?
Well, no, this is a different lady. I got raw dairy milk butter. Unbelievable. She has a website with all the educational scientific material on it that your previous week's host said there was, you know, a lack of. And her website is MID, Mid Valley, and then VU, V Victor U, and then I guess it's .com. It might be .org.
Well, very good. Well, I'm happy to pass those along so people can get more research on that. And I've had... before I stopped eating meat, I really had developed quite a taste for bison. We get a lot of it here in the Twin Cities, and there are many of these organic bison ranchers in the area. In fact, at the farmer's market in downtown St. Paul that they have, they bring out the organic bison. The people come directly from their own farms with it. And that's when I first started it, and it's way good. If you've never tried it, you'd like it. So you could start with those websites, but there you go. I'm just it was turning into like open plug America there for a second, but happy to happy to try to be a clearinghouse for information of all kinds. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation with Riley Martin. He's a credible guy with an incredible story. And we're going to try and learn from him and his experiences. Those of you who have heard him before on Coast to Coast know that he is a very entertaining man. We'll talk about the coming of Tan next on Coast to Coast AM.